is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Danny Gallagher, girls varsity head coach at Magnificat High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years, and now with its integrated web platform, coaches have the ability to add video to plays and share them directly to their players' Android and iPhones via their mobile app. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching content and resources through their blog and playbank. For access to these plays and more information, visit fastmodelsports.com or follow them on Twitter at fastmodel. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are jumping back on to talk some NBA, but we also have some Hoopheads Pod Network NBA news. This week we added two more NBA team pods. We added Motor City Hoops, and we also added X's and O's NBA Breakdown, which is our first real foray here on the Hoopheads Pod Network into the world of X's and O's. So we're very excited about that podcast with Mark Tinklenberg and his team. And so that podcast put out the trailer, and they're going to be coming through very, very soon with episode one. And they're going to take a deep dive into NBA X's and O's and coaching styles and offensive and defensive systems. So if you are a coach out there and you're interested in taking a deeper dive into NBA X's and O's, that podcast is going to be one for you. And then we have some more team podcasts coming soon. Spanning the Spurs will be coming up with Corbin Ford. And of course, we already had our other seven shows that we had for our NBA teams. And so we're continuing to build out the network, and we're going to have all the markets covered sooner rather than later. We're very excited about where things are going, Jay. I think there's a lot of good things to be had here on the network coming up soon.
I'm excited too. And, you know, I think our hopes, you know, obviously is to keep growing it, but also getting them to come on our podcast to talk NBA too, on our weekly podcast with NBA. I think that'll be awesome to have that opportunity to talk to them too.
Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll get a lot of cross-pollination across the podcast. And just, I think we have a lot of good people that are on board.
But we're still going to remain social distance, Mike.
That's right. Yes. So still doing everything remotely. We were ahead of the curve being you and I weren't socially distanced, but us and our guests have always been socially distanced, with the exception of probably maybe three or four interviews that I personally did right out of the gate at the very, very beginning our humble beginnings back in whatever, June,
2018.
Summer of 2018, let's put it that way. So hard to believe how long ago it was that we started this thing. And now we're at 13 total podcasts that somehow, some way, I'm managing to put together the episodes for 12 of them and do all the audio editing and all that stuff. So
you're a machine, Mike. You're a machine.
It's been a lot of fun, but it's also been a lot of work. So hopefully if you're out there and you're enjoying our show, please check out one of those other shows. And especially if you're a fan of one of the teams that we already have on board, check it out. Everybody that we have is doing a great job with their pod, and I think you'll be informed and entertained with any of the Hoopheads Pod Network shows that you decide to check out. So please do so. All right, on to business. Jason, start us off.
All right. So we have to start off. Woj tweeted out from sources the tentative Christmas Day schedule. So what we're going to do is I'm going to say the games, and then we're going to go through and we're going to rank the games based on Which games we have zero interest in watching and which ones we're the most excited about. Sound good, Mike?
Perfect.
Okay, so the first game, according to the schedule, is the Pelicans and the Heat. The second game would be the Warriors and the Bucks. The third game would be the Nets and the Celtics. The fourth game would be the Mavericks and the Lakers. And the fifth game is going to be the Clippers and the Nuggets. And I have to say, Mike, if this is the true schedule, this is the best Christmas Day schedule that I can remember, that all five games are watchable. Do you agree with that statement? Before we rank them, do you agree with that?
I do agree. I don't feel like there's a dud team in here. Like, I don't feel like there's a team that snuck in. And part of that maybe is just because we're not a month and a half into the season like we normally are when we get to December. Here, all these teams have high expectations. So it's still easy to kind of look at them on paper and say, these are going to be really good games, or I'm not turned off by team X or team Y. So yeah, I think on paper, this slate looks really, really strong. Because I know comparatively, when I think back to the previous two times that we've done this particular exercise, there's been at least one game that both you and I have said, yeah, that's the game where
I'll be
more than happy to sit and eat my Christmas Day meal during that game.
There's a team in there that's not on there that normally is on the Christmas Day games, and that would be the Raptors.
Correct. That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm right there with you. No offense to Toronto fans.
Sorry,
but
Toronto.
Yeah,
are they Tampa this year, or what
Tampa,
are we going to call them?
We got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers
and the Tampa Bay Raptors. Toronto. Yeah. I like that.
There you go. That's it.
Okay, so
La Tonto.
Before we rank the games, let's really quickly, of these 10 teams, which team is the worst? I think it's the Pelicans, sadly.
Yes, I agree. I think you have to say that New Orleans is the worst team, dependent upon the Kevin Durant that you're getting in Brooklyn.
Yes, true.
And I guess Golden State. To me, Golden State and New Orleans are probably the two weakest teams, which is kind of scary to say. You know what's funny is, when I think about Golden State now, and I know that their first roster, when we played them back in 2016, we being the Cavs, not that I was out on the floor against them, but when the Cavs played them in 2016 and they won 73 games, that was the year before they won 73 games, but that team was Clay, Draymond, and Steph, and that was 2015. Clay, Draymond, and Steph. And then clearly they had a much better bench. I think that was the difference in that team compared to the teams at the end and where they are now, is they just don't have the same depth at the back end of their roster and the back end of their depth in that first year or two when they were winning big in the regular season and then won the title in 2015. Their bench and their secondary players were a huge key to why they were very, very good. But you look at this team now, and even before Clay went down with his injury, if you'd have said Clay, Draymond, Steph, like, I don't know about you, but there's no way that I considered that team to be an unbeatable juggernaut, which is what they were in 2015, 2016, before obviously Durant joins them and makes them a true unbeatable juggernaut if they were healthy. So it's just interesting to think about Golden State and how they've fallen off, and not fallen off so much in losing Durant, but just in the fact that what once was sort of an unbeatable trio in Steph, Clay, and Draymond, that now it seems almost cute that was a team that nobody thought they could beat.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely, and obviously with Clay's injury, it's sad, because I was really excited to see them play again, and I think it's because I didn't have a rooting interest against them because the Cavs aren't going to be competing. I was really, really excited to see them. Oh, the other reason, Mike, the Raptors aren't on the schedule and the Rockets aren't on the schedule.
That's true. Yeah, no James Harden.
Oh, my gosh. Who's cooking on Christmas Day? I guess not.
Maybe there's a last minute trade in the works here to get Harden to Brooklyn so he can play on Christmas Day.
All right. So do we want to start on the game we're most intrigued by, or to start with the game we're least intrigued by?
Let's start least. Let's go.
Okay.
Least
well, the first
to, let's
game.
Go least
and here's why. It's at noon. There's zero chance I'm watching this game because it's at noon. and I don't know. I mean, I guess Zion. I know Zion's a big big name.
Think about how excited we were to watch Zion's first game last year.
Yeah, I'm not excited to watch this game. That's just my opinion. I don't know. What do you think is the worst? You're going to say, I don't know what you're going to make say the last game might be the worst. That's going to be my prediction.
No, because I like Denver.
Oh,
I like watching Denver. I'm not, I don't care about watching the Clippers, but I like Denver. I become a Denver fan. I really like Jokic, and Murray was a lot of fun in the playoffs the last 2 years. So yeah, I think that game is more interesting to me than a couple of the other ones probably. So I guess my last place game comes down to two. I would say the games that it goes between New Orleans and Miami and Brooklyn and Boston, but I guess there's more intrigue for me with Brooklyn and seeing what they're going to look like, as opposed to I kind of know what I'm seeing. Obviously, with the Heat, we just saw them 6 weeks ago, and the Pelicans have a brand new team to some degree, but because of Zion's injury and him coming back, and there's going to be some different things going on with Drew Holiday out of there, but you still bring back Ingram, you still bring back Lonzo, you still bring back Zion. And look, I'm as excited as anybody. I'm probably just as excited today as I was last year at this time to see what Zion's going to be and what he's going to look like. But I just watched 2.5 months of Miami Heat basketball, so I'm kind of good with watching Miami. So although I'm intrigued by what New Orleans is going to be, I guess I'm more intrigued or slightly more intrigued by Brooklyn. So I'm going to slightly edging out the Brooklyn-Boston game. I'm going to go New Orleans-Miami as my least intriguing game.
Man, we might be talking chalk here, Mike, because I agree. I think Brooklyn-Boston's my next least intriguing game. I hate the Celtics. I don't like what they did this offseason. I think they are worse. I'm a little bit intrigued by what KD is going to bring to the table. Is Kyrie healthy? What's that going to look like?
You're not a fan of either team, though. You're not going to be a Brooklyn fan.
In my opinion, that's not appointment viewing. Like my number one game that we're going to talk about that I'm so excited about, and I hope that everyone plays. Now, that's a little nugget, which I think you probably know what I mean. But go ahead, Mike. What's your? You agree the next game's the Nets-Celtics, right, for number two?
Yeah, I don't like watching Boston. I'm not a fan of Boston and Brooklyn, although I'm intrigued to see what they look like. Even if they look good, I'm probably not going to end up being a fan of Brooklyn, despite I guess I'll be rooting for Joe Harris. But otherwise,
Steve I'm Nash. Not really...
Yeah, and I like Nash. You're right. I do like Nash. Although I don't know. I can't see myself falling in love with the Brooklyn Nets and them being a team that I somehow latch myself onto as I'm sitting and watching games. Like, I'll probably root for them in that game. But over the course of the season, I don't see Brooklyn rising to the top of my teams that I like. I've never been a huge KD fan, so I don't think that's going to turn me, depending on what he ends up looking like. Kyrie, when he was here in Cleveland, liked him. I was a fan of him, but since then he's kind of gone in a direction that maybe I would have hoped that he didn't go. So yeah, I don't think I'm going to be too much of a fan of Brooklyn, and I'm not a fan of Boston. So that game for me is number four, I guess, on the list, slightly ahead of New Orleans and Miami.
Yeah. All right. The next one for me has to probably be I'm going to go Clippers and Nuggets on the next one. I don't really want to watch the Clippers play. The nice thing about the Clippers Nuggets game being at 10:30, I know I can actually watch that one. So that's the positive on that game.
That could increase its rating, the fact that you might actually be able to see it, right?
Yeah. So I think that one is probably my next one. And not just because I know what I'm getting with the Clippers. Like, they didn't really, in my opinion, and we're going to talk, they signed a few people today, but I don't think they moved the needle. And I don't really think they're a big. I do like the Nuggets. What the Nuggets did in the bubble for at least a small portion of it was exciting basketball. So I'm going to go with that game.
Yeah. So for me, I think the Clippers Nuggets game is the next one. And I think when you look at this game, you think back to the Nuggets coming back from 3-1. You think about them overcoming those two big leads that the Clippers had in game 6 and 7. But yet, it's still basically these two teams are pretty much the same. Clippers being led by Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, the Nuggets being led by Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. So I feel like it's something that, although it's intriguing, and although I think there's probably going to be some chippiness in this game based on the circumstances and how last season ended for the Clippers, I do think that this is a game that we've seen recently. And although there are some minor changes to the two teams, I don't think that there's anything here that jumps out at me that says, oh man, I can't wait to see how X looks or how Y looks. I think it is what it is. It should be a good game and it should be entertaining, but there's nothing necessarily intriguing, at least not in the same way that you have in the two games that I have ranked ahead of it.
Yep. All right. Next for me is Warriors Bucks. And it's primarily because the Warriors aren't full strength. I mean, I am interested to see how the Bucks look. But once again, we've seen the Bucks play a lot in the bubble, and it's not been that long. But more importantly, I just look at the other game, and I am just Luka versus LeBron on Christmas Day. I can't not make that number one. So as long that is provided that LeBron's playing, which I think that I know that they've talked that he's going to sit out games and whatnot. I can't imagine that they've got to have like a behind the door, closed doors deal that he's playing on Christmas Day unless he's severely injured. So I would be my assumption. I can't see him sitting out on Christmas Day. So that's why I have to put that game as the best game of the day as the Mavericks Lakers. I'm really excited about that game if that happens, and just the prospects of having Luka versus LeBron on Christmas Day and what Luka could cook up, and then what the Lakers just kind of getting a look at the new and actually improved NBA champion Lakers.
Yes, I think you are 100% right. So my next game, I would go in the same order. So it looks like we're in complete agreement on this particular ranking system. But yeah, I have Golden State, Milwaukee number two. Primarily, I guess, I'm not that intrigued with watching Golden State. I'm curious to see what Wiseman looks like with them and whether or not he's going to maybe not have a role at the beginning of the season, but does he grow into it? I'm just curious to see what he looks like. From the Bucks' perspective, obviously the key guy that you want to see is how does Jrue Holiday impact what they do? But I think you said it very clearly that we've now seen 2 years of Milwaukee and Giannis having tremendous regular season success. So I think you're now at a point with this Bucks team that, yeah, it's intriguing to see what Holiday does and how he impacts them. But ultimately, that's not going to be judged until playoff time, and it's not going to be judged until second round, Eastern Conference Finals, NBA Finals. None of this stuff leading up to that really truly matters from a standpoint of what Milwaukee's record is. I mean, again, they could run away with the number one seed in the East. I'm not saying that that's what they're going to do, but let's say they did. It's borderline meaningless as you look at what this team is going to be and what they're going to be remembered for. So clearly, this is a fun matchup. Everybody's going to want to see Jrue. Everybody's going to want to see what the Warriors look like with Steph back healthy and with Draymond back healthy and seeing what Wiseman can do. But without Klay, it takes a little bit of the luster off it, but it's still an interesting game. There's enough different things from what we saw from these two teams when last season ended that makes it intriguing. And then clearly, I think the number one game, as you said, is the Lakers and Dallas. The Lakers have really improved their roster, which is hard to believe. Now, we still don't know for sure that they're going to get better results from that roster. I think clearly the four guys that they brought in are better than the guys that they have replaced. But we do have to keep in mind that Rondo made a huge contribution to what they did in the playoffs. And as much as we all laughed at Dwight and JaVale McGee, both of those guys were contributors during the regular season, although they didn't contribute a whole lot come playoff time. They were both important to the Lakers over the course of the regular season. And Danny Green's been important to the Lakers as well. So you're bringing in better players, but you just never know what happens with chemistry and putting it all together. So it'll be interesting to watch how this Lakers team plays and whether or not they are continuing to get better. And I'll say it again, I always have to throw my Father Time comment in here. At some point, despite the fact that the Lakers roster is better, at some point, LeBron is going to start to decline. Now, he was playing at the top of his, at the peak of his powers 6 weeks ago. So I wouldn't anticipate that that's going to happen in the first 2, 3, 4 games. We're going to see some big drop off.
I mean, he's
LeBron.
Been working out with Bronny.
Yeah. And we probably, exactly. And we probably won't see it at all this season. And who knows? We may not see it until he's 48 years old at this point. But nonetheless, the Lakers
team
is...
He'll be like Mike Tyson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We can talk about that in a second. But the Lakers are definitely different. They're different enough that it makes me interested in watching what they're going to do. And then Dallas, obviously, is a team on the rise. We saw Luka challenge the Clippers last year, hit the game-winning shot in the game that he scored, whatever, he had a 43-point or whatever it was, triple-double. And he's clearly going to be somebody that is going to be challenging for the MVP of the league, if not this year, then certainly very, very soon. And Dallas not only has positioned themselves for potentially trying to stake out a spot for Giannis or some other big free agent next summer, but they've also done some interesting things along the margins with their team that I think could probably improve and give their chances of being successful in the playoffs this year a little bit of a boost. And you think about swapping out Seth Curry, great shooter, maybe a little bit on the small side, not much of a defender. And you bring in Josh Richardson, who not as good a shooter, much bigger, much better defender, was a guy who before he went to Philly was considered to be a player who was getting better and had a lot of value. And I think his value was depressed based on the way that he played with the Sixers, maybe in a system that didn't really fit what he did well. So I think that now you have an opportunity in Dallas. You put him out on the floor. You still have Tim Hardaway Jr. you put out there. You put Luka out there. You put Maxi Kleber out there. You have an opportunity to put a pretty big lineup out on the floor that, although individually some of those guys, including Luka, may not be great lockdown defenders, they still have the ability to put a really big team out there on the floor. And so do you know what's Porzingis' health status at this point? Do you know? Is he slated to open the season? I thought he was still going to be out heading into the season for some reason, but I'm seeing a lot of things that seem to be hyping up that he's going to play. So if he plays, clearly that makes a big difference for Dallas and makes them a lot better. But this is a game that should be a lot of fun to watch. It should be interesting, sort of the young gun coming in Luka, and the old hand in LeBron continuing to try to hold off.
Rick Carlisle today says that he's ahead of schedule, but he's doing light court work, so, and he will not play, however, until at least January.
Okay, yeah. So for some reason, that's what I thought. But I've also read a couple things today that were kind of hyping Porzingis as part of the matchup, so I didn't know if things had changed, but clearly they haven't. So no. Zinger won't be a part of that, which... it's too bad, but
still,
that's just
the
way
it is. Still got Luka.
Still, yeah, you still have two teams that are materially different, and you have two guys that are super fun to watch and probably among the top five players in the whole league in Luka and LeBron. So that should be a really, really good matchup. Tough time of night for at least for me.
That's the perfect time. My kid's going to bed, man.
The 8 to 10:30 slots, that's a tough one for me. But who knows? I might be able to pull it off. We'll have to see.
Good luck. All right.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, hoopheads. We all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com. with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
Do you know where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots? Do you know when using the backboard is better than taking a direct shot? Be certain that you are taking the highest percentage shots by training with the Shoticle. The Shoticle mounts on your backboard to give you the location of the highest percentage shots. Train with the Shoticle, and you will score more. basketball is a data-driven game, so don't ignore the data and the facts. We worry about the data so you can focus on shooting. Visit Shotticle.com now and start scoring more.
All right, so just wrapping up some free agent news. We kind of hinted at earlier today. There was two people that got signed by the Clippers. We had Reggie Jackson and we had Nicholas Batum. Once again, I don't think either of these guys move the needle for the Clippers, but they give them some depth for when they're resting Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, or if someone was to get hurt. These are solid guys that can play minutes and not be a complete catastrophic mess. Are they as good as Harrell? I don't think so. They're not going to win sixth man of the year, so I would say no. But I think they still fill out some spots on the roster for the team. So that's really the only thing on any free agent news that was big. Anything else you want to add to that, Mike?
Well, I'm excited because now you got two teams paying Nicholas Batum, because Charlotte's still paying him, I think, $9 million with that stretch provision. They're paying him $9 million for the next 3 years on their cap, which is just – it's just insane that he was ever making that much money.
Listen, and good for him.
Right, absolutely. You saw that thing about, I think, Darius Miller from – he was with New Orleans, and he tore his ACL, and he had a team option for this coming season, which he wouldn't have been able to play, so they probably were just going to release him. But they needed his salary as part of one of the trades that they made, either right leading into the draft or draft then, I can't remember. Yeah, and so they re-signed him to $7 million, and then shipped him. I think he went to Milwaukee, but you know he's not going to play because he's injured. So, but he got his contract. His contract picked up. Yeah, he got
nice,
got a seven
good
million,
deal, man.
Got a $7 million pickup for being salary filler. So, kind of interesting. So, yeah, I don't think none of those guys, as you said, they're, I guess, semi-competent professionals in Reggie Jackson and Nicholas Batum, but let's put it this way. If either one of those guys is a key component in anything you're going to do in the postseason next year, then that's probably not good for the Clippers.
Yep. All right. Other thing that came out yesterday was that the NBA sent out a memo to their teams. It's a 134-page memo. Obviously, we're not going to spend time dissecting all 134 pages. I think the big thing was that they have two potential paths to return if they test positive for COVID, Mike. There's a time-based resolution and a test-based resolution. Okay, the time-based resolution is that the infected person would have to either have gone at least 10 days since the date of their first positive test or the onset of any symptoms, if they've had any, gone at least 24 hours without a fever, without medication, and other symptoms have improved, while specifically noting that losses of taste or smell alone are not expected to prevent someone from leaving isolation. Okay, that's the time-based resolution. And then the test-based resolution is the person must return at least two consecutive negative PCR tests from samples taken at least 24 hours apart. Either way, any player who's determined to have a new positive case from testing will not be allowed to participate in any exercise training for at least 10 days from either the positive test or the resolution of symptoms, if they had any. And once they've made it the whole 10 days, they must spend 2 days working out by themselves, not interacting with anyone or participating in any team activities, wearing a mask at all times at the facilities, whether they are working out or not, and must participate in cardiac screening. So any player who tests positive will have to miss a minimum of at least 12 days before they can return to play. And then any player who has a severe case will have to be observed for at least 3 full days before they can be cleared to return to play. Your take on that? I mean, I think it all makes sense. That would be my – they're trying to avoid having to suspend the season would be my statement. And I think they're at least taking a better attack than the NFL is doing. I think the NFL is a disaster area right now, but that's just my take.
I mean, I think compare and contrast, and you just think about what the NFL has gone through and the way the NFL is handling things. And then you think about the way that the NBA is theoretically going to handle things. And I think you have to err on the side of player health and safety. And when you do that, I think then you're starting to put your schedule in jeopardy. Because if you think about an NBA team, it seems like with the NFL, you get these positional groups where guys are meeting for film and doing these different things, and they're in close contact with their position group. But maybe, again, if you're a wide receiver, you're not maybe having that much contact with the defensive line. And so you might have one group that's out, but other groups are in. And it's just football rosters have 54 people. And we saw it with the Broncos game where they had no quarterbacks. The NFL clearly is like, look, if we can play the game and there's enough bodies to fill a roster, we don't care if you don't have enough offensive linemen or you don't have a quarterback or you don't have whatever, we're going to play these games. And that's fine, because on a football team, I guess you can lose 10, 11, 12, 13 players and you can still have a game. In the NBA, we talked about this heading into the bubble. Like, what's the number where it no longer becomes viable to have a game? And then are you at a situation where, let's say you're the Cavs and six of your players have to quarantine? What do you do? Are you going to then bring up six players from the Canton Charge? How does that – I just don't know how that works and what the plan is. Are you going to cancel games? Are you going to bring up those players from the G League? Are you going to have more roster spots available as things go on if they see they're starting to have problems where maybe a team can have, you know, instead of being able to roster 17, you can roster 20 players and you have more of these two-way contracts? I have no idea what the league's going to do or what's going to look like. I just know that we're not going to get through the NBA season the same way we got through the bubble with no positive tests. We know that positive tests are coming. And it just seems to me like with basketball that everybody's together. I mean, you're in huddles together. You're at practice together. I don't know that it's going to be as isolated as it appears to maybe be in football. So it seems to me that if one guy gets it, that there's a high likelihood that there's going to be multiple players, coaches on a particular team that are going to get it. And I just don't know how the NBA is going to handle that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think obviously it's something we're going to be definitely keeping our eye on this whole time when the season starts up and what's going to happen. And who knows? I hope that we don't have to suspend the season. But I don't think there was a provision in that document that says their hopes are that following all the protocols they'll be able to like avoid having to suspend the season. I think they definitely have to be concerned about traveling to certain places right now that are hotbeds and make sure, you know, they're limiting the traveling party. I think it said 45 people is the most the traveling party can consist of, with 17 players being a part of the 45. I don't know how a team would need more than that. How would the team would need that many people in a track? I don't know if that includes entourage or anything or what that includes, but 45 people was the number. I think they should be able to do it, and we're just going to hope for the best, I guess, right? And that's all you can do.
That's all you can do, but let's face it, when you look at what's going on in greater society and you don't have those same controls that you had in place in the bubble, and you're going to have these guys out living their normal lives, it seems like it's highly unlikely that you're going to be able to get through it. And again, just because of the close proximity that these guys are working with each other day in and day out, it doesn't seem like you're going to get a situation where one guy is going to get it and you're going to quickly be able to quarantine that one player and not have it run through and have several members of the team end up getting it. So it's not as big of a deal, I guess, at this point in the season if you have to play games with players from the back end of your roster. I mean, it's clearly going to have an impact on playoff positioning and who makes the playoffs if teams are missing. Because again, if let's say LeBron gets it and he misses 12 days, I mean, potentially with the sort of condensed schedule that they're going to have, you know, he could miss potentially five games, which could that swing a number one seed or be the difference between them getting a one and a three seed? Sure, it definitely could. And so I think there's going to be an impact – on the standings and on teams. But I think it can be withstood earlier here in the season, whereas you think about that happening during the playoffs. If we're still in a similar situation with COVID and it's still going as strong when we get to playoff time as it is now, which let's hope not, but if it were to be, then you're talking about a situation where now if one of your key players gets it, just like we talked about heading into the bubble last year, if one or two of your star players get it at the wrong time, right before a playoff series, right in the middle of a playoff series, and they have to quarantine, well, that could obviously have a huge impact on what goes on in the league, depending upon which guys on your roster end up getting sick and have to be quarantined. So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and we're not going to get the answers until we kind of go through the process and work our way through the schedule and just kind of see what happens.
All right. Over the weekend, Mike, we had this boxing event, and Nate Robinson was a part of this boxing event for a very brief time. And I know you
I didn't watch it live, but I had no idea that Nate Robinson was boxing. And actually, my son, for some reason, when I told him that Tyson was fighting, of course, he didn't know anything about Mike Tyson, unfortunately, but he did know about this YouTube guy, whatever the guy's name is. Paul?
He's an idiot. He's from Westlake. Yes.
Okay, well, whatever. I have no idea. Anyway, my son's like, yeah, some YouTube guy is supposed to be fighting tonight. And he didn't say anything about him fighting Nate Robinson. Of course, the part of it that I was excited about was not Jake Paul and Nate Robinson fighting, but just being able to see vintage Mike Tyson come back and be fighting again was just incredible for somebody who's
And that was crap that they got a draw. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch it, but I was watching clips and it sounded like he won like eight of the rounds.
Don't understand. I don't understand what a boxing exhibition is versus like going out and actually trying to fight. Maybe I needed to do a little bit more research on that, but it just seems to me like if I'm in the ring with Mike Tyson, that he's probably trying to punch me in the head and knock me out. And if he's not, then I'm not really sure what it is that I'm watching.
Let me tell you. It was quite the exhibition on poor Nate Robinson. That guy literally got one-two'd and was dead. Like literally, he looked dead.
Well, I had actually somewhere on Twitter I saw prior to fight night. So it was sometime Saturday during the day. Somebody had tweeted out like 2.5 minutes of Mike Tyson knockouts, and a lot of those knockouts ended up with guys looking exactly like Nate Robinson, where they just got hit and boom, they just collapsed completely unconscious to the ground, just like Nate Robinson did. And I actually read an article today, I don't know if you saw it, but that Holyfield and Tyson are trying to, well, I don't know if they're trying to, but Holyfield said, we need to get in the fight and we need to get in the ring and, you know, this would be great for the trilogy. And I forgot kind of that Holyfield actually beat Tyson twice. That kind of escaped my mind.
I'm gonna tell you what, though, I don't think there's any way he would beat Tyson now, because Tyson's looks like he's in really good shape, and I can't imagine Evander Holyfield's in good shape right now.
Yeah, I have no idea what kind of shape Holyfield's in, but we know Tyson's in pretty good shape, and when Tyson was around, he was definitely a guy that his fights were, they were can't miss viewing. I mean, you had to watch them, and I still remember. I know I've told this story, probably not on the podcast, but I had a buddy who he hosted the Tyson Spinks fight that ended up lasting 91 seconds, but he had this whole big party planned and, you know, had food and all this stuff and, you know, told people what time to come over. And I remember going over to his house and, you know, getting there maybe like 15 minutes before the fight. And then it was literally over in 91 seconds. And you're like, what? Like, this is it? And not that you should have been surprised based on Tyson's career, but, you know, that was just one of those things that when he was in his prime, there was nobody better. And I'll never, ever forget one of the sports moments that sticks with me where I know exactly where I was when Tyson got beat by Buster Douglas. And I didn't see the fight, but we were actually had a game that night and we were coming back off a road trip. And I got back to my dorm. Of course, this is the day pre-phones, so it's not like the only way you could find something out is by seeing it on the ticker on ESPN or whatever. And I remember getting back to my dorm room and coming in and my roommate saying, Tyson lost and me being like, get out of here. You know, like you're kidding. Like there's no way he's trying to pull one over on me, and then having to get in, you know, turn the TV on at, you know, whatever it was, 1:00 in the morning, 1:30 in the morning. And just watching at that point, I don't think you could even see highlights. You were just seeing like still photos of the fight. And there's the one of him like
groping
around.
Was it in black and white, Mike?
No, it was not in black and white. I didn't have to turn on the radio in order to hear it. I did actually have a TV. But I think of that photo of him like crawling around in the ring looking for his mouthpiece after he got knocked out. That was the most incredible thing, because to me, at that point in his career, he seemed entirely invincible. Like there was no way he would ever lose and nobody could beat him. And I'll never forget one just hearing that for the first time and just being incredulous and thinking that the person that was telling me, my roommate, had to be lying.
So he was the winner of that night, but I think the ultimate winner, as has been talked about by many people, is Snoop Dogg. And he should immediately be an announcer in lots of exciting things, because he had some lines in that thing. And the problem that you run into is I don't know that he could say some of the lines on national TV. I think that would be the problem with Snoop Dogg. But I enjoyed listening to the clip so that I saw. And I think we've delved enough into the Hoopheads boxing podcast. I don't know.
That's it. So you can be Dr. Freddie Pacheco and I'll be Larry Merchant. So
okay. All right. So the last thing we want to just speculate on is, will Giannis sign the extension before December 21st? We have 19 days. Who knows when he will do it, if he does it. Here's my view on it, Mike. If he's going to sign it, he's going to sign it in the next week. Here's why. I don't think that he wants the cloud of it hanging over the whole training camp and preseason. I think he's going to sign it. He's going to sign it. If he doesn't sign it in the next week, I'm going to start to worry, because I think that's a signal to me that he's not sure if he wants to commit or not. That's my point of view. So I think he's going to sign it. But if he doesn't sign it by the time we're podcasting next Tuesday, if I'm the Milwaukee Bucks, I'm starting to worry.
Okay, here's my take on it. I think he signs it, because I think at this point, the length of the contract, I don't think it matters. Because if a year and a half from now, he decides he doesn't want to be in Milwaukee, guess what's going to happen?
He'll say he wants to be traded.
He'll say he wants to be traded and he's not going to be in Milwaukee. He'll force his way out if he needs to. And so why would you not sign that 5-year, 200 whatever, $45 million or $240 million, whatever it's going to be? You sign it. You put all that money in the bank. It's there. You're guaranteed that cash. And it's been proven that if you say, I don't want to be here, I'm not going to play here, then what choice does the team have? I mean, yeah, they can say, hey, suck it up and keep playing. And maybe Giannis is the guy who would keep playing even if he was unhappy. But most teams, given that situation, are going to do whatever they can to deal that guy and get the guy out of there who doesn't want to be there. So I think he's going to sign it for that reason, in that it's not really locking him up for 5 years. It's locking him up until he decides, I don't want to be here anymore. And if that's at the end of this season, at the end of next season, in the middle of a season, Milwaukee's going to have to do what Milwaukee has to do, which is, in that case, if you have an unhappy Giannis Antetokounmpo, you're going to trade him. And that's just the way it is. So I think he's going to sign it.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll see what happens. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Have anything else.
Done. We want to thank everybody for tuning in with us tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.